This is WMCA, your conversation station. I'm Bert Knapp. Stay tuned now for the Barry Gray Show next. I tell you, I'm saying good afternoon, and I'm splitting. You think I'm going to sit around here? You're crazy. Because the invective and the insults are going to fly. Barry Gray and my guests today are reading from left to right, Jack Spector. He does the weekend sock hop on WCBS FM. That's what it says. And Joe O'Brien, morning man at WLMA in PNA.
No, WHUD. Blew it already. WHUD. LNA is the AM station. HUD is the FM station.
As you know, you can tell. Very large operation.
50,000 watts, Barry. You only have five.
That's Harry Harrison, and that's when we're at. Harry Harrison, morning man at WCBS FM. And Dandy Dan Daniels, morning man at WYNY. And
he blew it again.
He blew it again, Barry.
Listen, I told you, I want to thank you all for being here, and I'll see you tomorrow with a really good guest. Be right back. Let me begin again. Start from the top.
Okay.
All right. Barry Gray, take two. Reading from left to right, Jack Spector. He has a weekend sock hop on WCBS FM. Joe O'Brien, morning man on WHUD. That's 5:30 to 10 each morning, 50,000 watts in Peekskill, third largest station in the area and first in the Hudson Valley.
The Hudson Valley, right.
First in the Hudson Valley. Apple knocker time.
Right.
Harry Harrison, morning man at WCBS FM. What time are you on, sir?
5:30 to 9, Barry.
5:30 to 9.
Right.
And Dan Daniel, singular.
Right, no S.
Morning man at WNY. WYNY from 6 to 10 a.m. And you know what strikes me? You guys are all working in the morning.
Right,
that's
correct.
Right. Yeah.
Except Jack. Except me. Mm. I work all the time.
Well, there is one thing we all have in common, though.
What you all have in common is talent.
Oh, well, thank you.
We are the good guys. We are the fun guys. Playing the hits. Morning and night time. Always the right time. First on your dial. Radio's
Harry.
Even if you're 150, just keep your dial at Radio Nifty. Friends, never fear. The good guys are here on WMCA.
Hey!
That
was great. I didn't know we were going to do that.
How did it all come about, the good guys? Somebody tell me. I never really...
The real honest story?
Want the truth?
Okay.
The real.
Out of KFWB in Los Angeles, there was a station out there, those call letters, and they were using it as a line, just as a throwaway line.
Right.
And they were represented by John Blair in those days, and so was WABC in New York, and they began to use the line too. Ruth Meyer, who was our program director...
She ought to be here.
Here, right.
Really, yeah.
She heard the line, and she said, I remember I was with her in a car one day. She said, they're doing it wrong. They're doing it wrong. Oh, I have this picture in my mind. And she just, the whole thing was, you know.
It became a marketing concept,
that, right.
Really. We were the only people who ever did anything with it. I think you might call us the first group.
That's
there
right.
were people who got together as a group before and sang and did things, but people thought of us as an individual entity. One without the other didn't work. It was the good guys, and we...
And we were the first ones to ever wear jackets. Now everybody wears them. You know, the ABC jackets, the NBC jackets.
We
were the first
right.
ones. We had three sets of jackets.
Also,
white,
on that
red
guy
and yellow.
Hey, that's
every
right.
place we showed up,
Barry,
we're
that's...
all dressed alike, and we just completely
yeah,
overwhelmed
right.
them.
But Joe and I came here essentially at the same time,
right.
going way back. Now, each of you got on board at a different time. So how did it all become a cohesive group?
When Ruth Meyer decided that the good guys were going to be it,
uh-huh.
then she started bringing in people that fit the pattern. She already had several. I can't remember the exact sequence. I think
I came from Peoria.
You came from Peoria.
That's
you
right.
came from
Chicago.
Chicago. And
I
you
came from Houston
Minneapolis.
Via Minneapolis. I
yeah.
came from Minneapolis, yes.
I and came, I remember doing news at night when Barry Gray was on the air. And I found that interesting. He used to call me, I think, Harry Hennessy.
That's right.
I remember
Harry
that.
Hennessy, right.
There was
well,
a Harry Hennessy
was
in
three-star final.
And I said, can't he get my name right? You know, of course, I didn't talk to him. You know, I was in the newsroom watching go by. And it was exciting, though, coming from Chicago and Peoria and seeing all the great people and that Barry would interview.
Was Muni on then?
Yeah, Scott was on the air then.
Scott used to do the news, and Scott used to always say,
President Eisenhower got back from abroad. You remember?
And he was right.
Yeah, he was right.
Always. He said, and then he finishes saying, well, if that doesn't get them to take me off the news, nothing will.
Right.
But they never did.
But I did news for about, a year, and I did a Sunday show, and then we started to put everything together, and then... Right. It was Joe in the morning and myself and Dan and Jack. And,
it was Jack and then myself. When I first came, I was doing news on Barry's show at night and then doing the all-night show. And then when Ruth decided with a good guy concept,
right. It
started like around Christmas time in 62.
Right.
And then B. Mitch Reed, Einstein, he's going to be with us on the phone from California.
B. Mitch Reed will be on the phone if they can get him into a booth.
Right. February 63.
He generally levitates about 800 feet. To get him into a booth, he'll be on the phone. But how many good guys were there in total?
Seven. All together.
Well, really,
and one honorary.
Yeah, one honorary. The Sunday.
Well, were you counting all the guys who were ever good guys? Is that what you're counting?
Yeah. We had two separate teenage idols and two separate all-night guys, so that made seven.
That's right.
And Ed Bear was the guest good guy.
I just saw Ed Bear a couple of weeks ago.
Grand boy. How is he?
Looks 800.
Mm-hmm.
And Gene Anthony was involved.
Gene Anthony replaced Johnny Dark, who was fired twice. The only all-night man ever fired twice at the same station.
Well, John disappeared one day.
We had a marvelous general manager at that period. The elevator door would open on 13, the door open, and the general manager would say, "Don't get out, you're fired." And the guy went down to the main floor, and that was it. Into oblivion.
Yes.
Oh, you remember, Harry had a great line, if the boss comes in, get his name.
Right, I was going to do that. I'm glad you did it, Joe. I wanted to wait till Barry was finished.
Now, how long did the good guys reign?
About 20 minutes.
No.
Six years.
2 to 7 years.
It was
seven years.
I mean, when we really owned the town was from February of 63 to about September of 68.
That's right.
And what happened?
Well, that's a long story. And pretty boring.
Yes.
Actually, what really happened was the radio business changed, and the salesmen got involved in the picture, which is always bad. If salespeople get involved in programming inevitably suffers. At least it has in my experience.
Yeah.
But also, the world was changing then, too. Don't forget, we had the 68 Chicago Convention, and we had the Vietnam War, and we had the advent of FM as a separate entity, and you had remember the Monterey Festival, where you had all kinds of new people like Janis Joplin, Blood, Sweat and Tears, Jimi Hendrix. You had this explosion of music and no place to put it because the stations like ours, and stations, even though we played a lot more new things than ABC did, you really didn't have a place to put all this great new music. So that's what happened. A lot of that audience went away. Because we were always the place in town where you could hear the new stuff.
Right.
And we weren't adding it. A lot of stuff was happening very, very fast, Barry. And there's no one reason for the demise.
Why has the picture changed so much in New York in the last 2 years? You know, trying to figure it out. It has, though, let's face it.
I want to come to that in a moment. I'm talking happily with Dan Daniel, Harry Harrison, Joe O'Brien, Jack Spector. And this is a good guy reunion. I need a moment for a sponsor, and then we'll continue. My guest at 12:19 is Jack Spector, Joe O'Brien, Harry Harrison, Dan Daniel, reunion of the good guys. Jack, you started to tell me, what happened in New York, in your view?
No, I'm Jack.
I'm sorry.
Joe.
I'm
I got already.
Out of sight, out of mind.
You mean now or then?
You said New York has changed.
Well, New York radio has changed in the last couple of years. Yeah. ABC is no longer number one. And TKU and BLS.
KTU.
What does it mean, Jim?
Nothing. We don't work there, so forget their call.
Disco music came and went and all that sort of thing. What is it? What's the new music now? What do they call it?
I think there's still
fusion.
Fusion music.
Yeah, no, I don't. I'm in Never Never Land here.
Well, Dan is.
While all this was going on with the good guys, I just kept marching with John Lindsay and all that stuff.
We remember that, right?
Yeah. You know, I remember a fella in the hall Murray the K.
Yeah, Murray the K.
The, like, 100, 200. How'd that 50 get in there?
I'd like to go back to a word reunion that you used, Barry. Actually, if this were a Tuesday, we'd feel right at home, because really, usually the only time, unless we were out doing a personal appearance, and we did a lot of those, the only time all four of us were ever in the same room, and I can't remember the last time, was on Tuesdays when we had music meetings.
That's right.
And we had the only Democratic music meetings around, whereby everybody had an equal weighted vote and the whole thing, and all the records would come in and we would vote.
And
that
then
doesn't
we
happen anymore.
The,
that's decided by like one or two guys,
oh, yes,
like music directors and program directors now. But we used to vote, and we used to pick the music that was played in New York and became a hit.
You mean, and after that, we had a press conference, remember?
We
the
would
kids
have
come from all over the five boroughs in Westchester and Jersey.
You mean you played every record every Tuesday that had come in the preceding
right.
week?
We vote on it.
Well, there was some screening. You know, obviously, there are a lot of records that come out every week, and especially in those days, and a lot of it was pretty bad, you know, and it would be pre-screened, and really a lot of the good stuff would come in. I don't know, we might put anywhere. Some weeks we put six on, some weeks we put one on, some weeks we put 15 on.
And none some weeks.
You know, I'm enjoying CBS FM because I am playing things now that we introduced on the air.
Absolutely.
In the 60s. And Joe mentioned the press conference. A gal from Brooklyn, I don't remember, I meant to write the name down, but she sent me a letter. And she also sent me some pictures from those press conferences.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun, you know.
I'm getting a lot of that stuff.
And I think that it's interesting that through the years, I think all of us, people still refer to us as good guys.
Yes.
I mean, I get mail, and I remember when you gave me a dozen roses on your Housewife Hall of
Would
Fame.
Would you believe that
whatever?
I get phone calls and Peekskill telling me of people you gave roses
I'm
to?
Sure.
I mean it.
Definitely,
just, they don't call just for me, but they'll mention you with the roses.
We had a Belmont Day Saturday, and we had a lot of people I gave away tickets to. And it's amazing. That's all, you know, they said the... They enjoy the music, and we talked about the good guys, and all of us, it's a tremendous thing.
Absolutely.
And they remember every promotion that we did. You know, I won tickets with you, and Jake gave me this. And
I saw you with the Beatles at Shea Stadium.
That's right.
And all that stuff, yeah.
And they, it's amazing how people will remember these days.
And we played baseball at Yankee Stadium.
Oh, yeah.
And well, that was Schaefer, wasn't it?
Balance.
There were so many promotions.
What happened to the sweatshirts?
You can still see 30,000 on any Sunday at Jones Beach.
Oh, yeah.
They're worth, you know, they're
worth
$50. People wear, you know,
they're collector's items.
Dry off or something, whatever they're wearing with their cutoffs or wearing over their bathing suit or whatever.
I used to bring home boxes of them and say to people, what size
are
you kidding?
You're the guy that got them.
I don't have one.
Something
they
else
got to be worth a fortune.
Something else we had, but not in great a number as the sweatshirts, were the Good Guy beach towels.
That I had.
And I had squandered a few of those, and I just had two stolen off my clothesline at my beach house. Somebody wanted them. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I never saw those.
Oh, they were great.
How'd they get
Dan got them all.
They were like,
I never saw
them.
I still have about 8 or 10 Good Guy sweatshirts.
Great. Yeah. Beach
some
towels.
Of the little ones were there. Well, we made some originally for
he's
little
he's saving
kids.
Them for his old age.
No. You mean tomorrow?
Yeah. Use them now.
You know, Harry said something.
We gave away $250,000.
Now, I don't think I... Should I have to remind you one at a time? I mean, it's a great compliment, but we're all talking at the same time.
I knew it would be this way.
Harry mentioned something very important. He said the... You know, hearing from people who want to hear music that they heard with us when they were teenagers. That's the biggest demographic around now, and people are really going for that 25 to 34 demographic. And the oldies that we play were the new hits when they were teenagers, and that's why they love us.
I'm enjoying the music now because it brings back a lot of memories.
Off and Away, remember that one,
sure,
fellas? On the Tuesday when we played that
one,
Fifth
song.
Dimension? No, do you remember that day? That was the day they were filming it. A kid was filming the music meeting, and it just so happened that day, the Fifth Dimension record was put on. We all went ape, remember?
Absolutely.
We all wound up, I think we took a half an hour with that, we all wound up singing it. Especially Dan, you went crazy.
Well, I know the kid. His name was Jerry Kotz. He's now a top film director for commercials and some minor features in New York, and he happened to be using that film as his master's thesis in film at NYU.
Right.
He did The Good Guys, and you've seen it 30 times on Channel 13.
That's
when they
right,
did the film 20
yeah.
mm-hmm.
When did it start to dissolve, the Good Guy era? How did it happen?
About 68, about 1968.
And who, what happened? Who went first?
I don't know, really. I was the last. I was the last.
I went to
Gary went first.
Gary Steve and
Steve.
Went to
Europe
and into the television film business in Switzerland.
Yeah,
how's that?
Yeah, I know. He said goodbye and he said he was going to Switzerland. And
that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
And I wish he was here today. I'd sure like to see him.
He's in. He's in.
Look
St.
at any
now.
Bank.
Well, he is the president of the radio division for Doubleday.
Yeah,
that's how well Gary's done.
He's well, actually, the Wooleyberger is the president, and Gary is
Gary's assistant.
And then
Sigmund Freud. Then Harry left.
Yeah, yeah, I went to ABC.
And he went to ABC. 1968. And
that was the best kept secret I ever saw.
And,
he said goodbye on Saturday morning and Monday morning. He went to work for ABC.
Well, listen, we have four children, you know.
That's right. Self-preservation is the first law of the radio.
I had one day off and I went to work at ABC.
That was enough, Harry.
Sure, that's right.
Okay.
Has not had a day off since.
And then?
And then that was it. Then Dan became morning man. And you stayed in your side.
I stayed on base.
These guys, and then right. Steve Lubunsky came back to MCA and attempted to bring back the good guys, but that didn't work.
Those 2 years after you guys left were the two most miserable years I've ever spent in my entire life. It wasn't the same, and I didn't know how to handle it. And I stayed. I stayed for money, and I'll never do that again. You know, it was really miserable. It was a very, very sad time in my life.
No, the 62 to 68 was an unbelievable. It was one of those times when everything worked. We could do no wrong, no matter what we did. Even if we picked the wrong records, it worked.
You know, I talked to a lot of people at CBS FM. I talked to a lot of people at CBS FM and said, were the good guys friends off the air as well as on? And the answer is yes. I don't know why it happened. The chemistry just happened to be right. I think it may have been an accident. I don't know, but
Jack,
it was just great.
I didn't want to break the news to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Brian. That's from Jack Spector, right?
Now, have you lost track of each other now?
Yeah, pretty much. We haven't lost track. I know I ask about you guys. I hope you ask about me every now and then. I don't get to see you, though. I think I've seen each of you, maybe three. Well, Jack and I worked together at the country station in 74, so
right.
I haven't seen these two guys more than three times since 1968.
I see you on television all the time, doing commercials.
I have three children, as Harry said. You know, you got to keep paying the bills.
Yeah. Now, how did you find yourself, Joe, in Peekskill? How'd that happen?
When I left NBC, I already owned a place up in the country, and I decided to get out of New York.
I remember when you bought the place up in the country.
I bought it in 67.
Right, I remember during those years, and Joe would go up there, and when I heard Joe was there, I figured automatically that's great. He has his place in the country.
So we just moved up to Dutchess County, and it's gorgeous.
And what's your life like?
I have a big place. I have 18 acres, a pond, and a trout stream, and the whole jazz. And I live in the country. Come into the city a lot, but I live in the country.
I
love it.
What's your lifestyle like? What time do you go to bed at night?
About 9 or 10, depending on whether you get a nap in the afternoon.
Right.
All of your afternoon nappers?
Yeah, all of our lives revolve around... when you work mornings, I think Joe and Dan will agree, you know, your whole life is how much sleep you're going to get.
Right. Yeah.
If you go to a movie, I'll tell the children, we'll go to a movie, what time does it start? 5 in the afternoon,
good.
Possibly 4. Good.
Then
we'll be home, you know.
Yes.
And
none of these 9 o'clock movies.
No. You know. I mean, as Joe said, 9, 10 o'clock, that's it. And that's, you become adjusted to it. People wonder how you can do it.
I now have a 5-year-old, and my Rosemary says, son, Paul, eat your dinner. Daddy has to go to bed.
That's right.
And what time do you live in the city, Harry?
No, I live in Bergen County, in Jersey, Barry.
And what time do you have to get up to make your...
Well, I've been getting up 3, 3.30. I'm on the air earlier now at CBS FM. It's 5.30 to 9.
Everything's 5:30 now. He's 5:30. I'm 5:30.
Well, I was now. As of this morning, I'm 6. So I'm
six
grateful for the extra half hour sleep. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Is it an extra half hour?
Well, my head tells me, you know. Well, if you have an extra half hour, then you can stay up an extra half hour. So I don't. I'm sure.
Cumulatively, how many years of broadcasting do we have here at the table, Dan?
Lord.
Well, I actually started Armed Forces Radio Far East, but commercially, 1955 in Houston.
So that's 25 years.
Close to 25 years. This December will be 25 years.
Harry?
1955. I started in Chicago, Illinois, and worked my way down.
I believe you, Harry.
I started in Chicago, and people said it couldn't be done and so on, but I didn't know that it couldn't be done. You know, I mean, I was a young guy, went to school. I had rheumatic fever. People say, how did you get involved in radio? I had rheumatic fever, Barry, when I was about 16.
And you know, it helps to be sick in radio.
Oh, bed patient. Yeah. You know, and that at that time, radio became really a companion for me. A fellow in Chicago radio, an early morning man named Ernie Simon was...
Oh, yeah.
Remember Ernie?
Yes.
He used to listen to him, and he really got me through rheumatic fever. And then eventually, when I started thinking about doing something, I think the seeds were planted then because radio was great. And I said, hey, maybe I could do that. So I remember my sister and I, you know, the ad, be a disc jockey and
sure,
so on.
Sure.
So she and I went downtown, Chicago, Illinois. This will be over in a few minutes, Joe. And I see O'Brien hasn't changed, right? Think of your next line, Joe. We'll be finished here. But it was one of those things where you walk in, and if you could mumble anything, you know, the woman would say, tremendous potential. Do you hear that, man?
How,
you know,
voice.
I said, I will want to be a...
You sound great on the, you know, on the phone.
Yeah. So I was there about a week. I think I paid, I don't know how many hundreds of dollars, you know, but I was sitting there saying, you know, I'm young, but I'm not stupid. I don't know what's, you know, I'm not learning anything. So I just... left there, that was my radio experience, and I wandered around. I did some FM work. I'm in FM radio now, and I started in Chicago there. They had an FM station, the public schools. But meanwhile, I had stopped at WJJD, it was, and who should be in the hallway but my idol, Ernie Simon.
What, wasn't he a big FM guy?
Well, Ernie unfortunately passed away a few years ago, but at that time he was doing a lot of television and radio.
I remember him.
And I walked up, you know, and explained, I want to be in radio, and he was very nice. I always remember he took a few minutes and he introduced me to somebody else, and the other fellow said, first of all, don't go to radio school. And he sent me to the FM station owned and operated by the city of Chicago, and I hung around there and just watched. Meanwhile, I was working in a supermarket, you know, in a drugstore, and this and that and the other thing. And I was filling out applications at radio stations, and I got a call to come to an audition. So I went, and happy to say, I started at WCFL, 50,000 watt station in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I
owned by the AFL-CIO.
That's right.
It's a nice
and you can imagine how I felt. I mean, I couldn't ask too many questions because I was supposed to know what I was doing. You know? What's that? Oh, a microphone. Oh, yeah. Huh? But I got through a long summer of placement, and happy to say it worked out well, and a new program director came in, and he had worked in Peoria. And I said, Peoria? And I laughed.
You got
to like
kidding.
Everybody, yeah.
That's where they make Caterpillar, and that's about all, right?
That's it. You know, so he said, you need some seasoning. You got a heck of a potential. And so on. So I took his advice and I went to Peoria and I did mornings there. I did radio and television, and I was there a few years. The old line about a big fish in a small pond and all this business. And I enjoyed Peoria. It was great. Our station was a daytime operation, and those were the days where you come in with the right people and the jingles and the contests. We were number one in the city. Interestingly, at that point in Peoria television, there was a young man who was doing weather on the CBS affiliate there. And he has done rather well. He got out of weather, and he's in news. His name is Jim Jensen. And he went to Boston. I left in about, well, to be, you know, come with Ruth and Joe and everybody here in about 1959. And he left not too long after that, went to Boston and got into news. And we certainly know what happened to Jim.
Still the best softball pitcher in the city.
In 59, didn't
you? Yeah,
that's right.
That's right.
So Joe, it was 3 years before the good guy started.
That's right.
Now,
Joe and I have known each other for almost about 40
about
years.
40 years.
40 years. 40 years.
Oh, sure.
We worked.
I'm not even that old.
Jack. Jack.
Little baby Jack.
Jack, Bubby, you're that old. Joe and I, we were the children here during the World's Fair. This Irish juvenile with the great blue eyes. I mean, he looked like a choir boy. I've never seen a better-looking kid in my whole life. And we worked here with all these dirty old men that hung around. But I never really knew how you got here. How did
I started out in a very weird fashion. Well, first I started out as an actor, and that bombed. I went to work for a thing called Teleflash. This was a wire service to give race results in bars and other places. And that's where
He's
I started.
Dirty.
Really?
Oh, yes.
He's a dirty, tall man.
Yeah, yeah.
Dirty Dan.
Yeah.
And through Teleflash, I met the chief announcer of WMCA, a guy named Bob Carter.
who was a horse player.
Was he a horse player?
And he heard me on Teleflash and hired me. Would you believe it?
I remember him like it was yesterday. Great voice.
Right.
Great voice. He was on the phone to his bookmaker constantly.
But while the record was playing.
Carter, you've got a spot. Just a moment. Two on the third. Never seen anything. He had it down to a fine... to hone to a fine point, the man could make a bet, do a spot, and come back and pick up the phone while the bookie was still writing, would have done a commercial.
We all know a couple of guys in town still the same way who shall remain nameless.
Yeah. And you came here?
Yeah, as a sports announcer. And I started as a racing announcer, and basketball, and I did football with Mel Allen, and boxing.
Sure.
I had never seen a fight in my life. Mm. Never saw. I had never been to a fight in my life.
You weren't just like
went up to the Coliseum and did it.
Yeah. If I'd have known that, I would have idolized you more than I did.
And I did the Golden Gloves with Jimmy Powers. Remember Jimmy Powers, sports editor of the news?
Sure, sure.
And, you used to do that El Producto thing on television.
On Channel 5.
Eastern Parkway Arena.
As a matter of fact, I preceded him.
Broadway
Schenkel did the fights, and I did the commercials. And you, yes, right, you preceded. And Ernie Kovacs followed us.
I did the news at 11 o'clock on Channel 5, then El Producto, then Kovacs, Sealy Mattress.
Oh, my.
Kovacs with the best-looking lady that you ever saw in your life. She is now Mrs. Elie Kazan, Barbara Loden.
That's right.
Barbara Loden was the, Kovacs had this gorgeous gal that would walk across the set carrying a card that say some funny thing, wearing marvelous tights, and you forget it.
Yeah, right.
And that was Barbara Loden. Mm. She's now Mrs. Elie Kazan, who is a movie maker. And we got to pause. We're going to pause and maybe never come back, because next is the Jack Spector story.
Oh.
And I don't think the world is ready for the Jack Spector story. This is the Good Guy Reunion, I'm happy to say, with Dan Daniel and Harry Harrison and Joe O'Brien and Jack Spector. And we were about to come to the Spector saga when we paused for that word.
We don't have enough time, Barry. Good night, folks.
Jack, actually, we've got just enough time, about 40 seconds.
Yeah, that'll cover it. What do you want to know, Barry?
I want to know how... I know you're a New Yorker.
Right.
And how did you get into broadcasting?
The very way that Harry did. I went to one of those broadcasting schools.
You went to Peoria?
No. On 42nd Street, above the New Amsterdam Theater. What used to be called the New Amsterdam
Theater. I know the one. That lady with the red garter.
Sensational. And I was told the same thing. You have a rare voice, young man. You go far on this business. And,
I do.
And I talk like this in those days.
Yeah.
Which
the
is what I talk when I get out of the studio.
His shorts were too tight.
Have any of you seen the film Airplane?
Yes. No.
There's a scene in Airplane. Great-looking guy playing the pilot. White-haired, marvelous,
Peter Graves.
And a kid comes up to the cockpit and he wants to see the cockpit, and Peter Graves looks at him and he says, "Tell me, son, have you ever seen a grown man in the nude?" I don't know why you just reminded me of that.
Now follow that, Jack.
Go ahead, Jack. That's my life. No, and I got into it. I had to, I went for about 7 or 8 months to this broadcast school, and I wound up in West Virginia for $48 a week. Thrilled, the most money I'd ever made in my whole life.
Yeah.
In 1955.
So?
And got married 2 days before I went into broadcasting. No honeymoon, just got a rabbi, $25, got married in the study. Everybody thought we had to. Today it would be very fashionable. And I started in West Virginia. Stayed about 2 months, went to Pittsfield, Mass., on to Albany, Providence, Chicago. And then from Chicago joined MCA in 1961, May of 61.
Huh. So what we're saying is that there's well over 100 years of broadcasting experience in this room.
Oh,
incredible.
Something Jack didn't mention might be of interest to the people out there is he used to be in the Dodger farm chain. He was a baseball player.
That was going into the Korean War, right. I played part of a season and got drafted in that very first crush of that first draft movement of September 1st, 1950. I was in there, that first bunch. And that's ridiculous, being a Jewish machine gunner in Korea. Who needs that?
Yeah.
In December of 1950.
Have you ever felt that you might have made a sports career?
Yeah, I still play ball all the time. I have never stopped. I don't know if I could hit a major league curveball. I will never find out. I think I could, but who knows?
Jack plays a doubleheader of softball every Sunday in Brooklyn. I guess every Sunday of your life, right?
Yeah, never stop.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of radio today? Today, this very instant, the kids that want to come into it today.
Oh, the opportunities are unbelievable today. Incredible, especially if you go to college.
Well, because you have so many more facilities today.
So many more stations now.
Yeah. Well, I got into radio, there were 900 radio stations. AM and FM was meaningless at that time. Today, I think there are, what, over 8,000?
8,000, sure.
8,000, unbelievable.
New York City has 63 radio stations.
Yeah.
Sure.
Why, and why have none of you ever involved yourself in the ownership of a station?
Well, looking back, I had an opportunity.
I guess.
Yeah, we should have. I had an opportunity when I was in Peoria, going back there. I had an offer to go to St. Louis, buy a station in Illinois, or come to WMCA. And I really seriously thought about it, because in those days, you could pick up a station $100,000,
sure.
$200,000. And there was a young fellow that produced a television show that I did in Peoria, and he had some money, and I would do the programming, you'd get an engineer and so on. But I thought, Barry, how many opportunities do you have to come to New York?
Yeah,
sure.
That's what it boils down to.
I came very close to getting a radio station with Bert Knapp. Bert and I have remained friendly. And about 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago, we had some money. We came within 2 days of closing on a radio station, two stations actually, AM and FM in Albany. And the backers were the Rodgers and Hammerstein estate.
Mm-hmm.
And we dealt with Billy Hammerstein and an accountant, a lawyer named Walter Kaufman. And then a show opened on a Monday night. We were supposed to close on Thursday. Bert and I were going to go up and run these two operations. We had it. It was done. And a show opened on Monday night called Rex, which closed to the tune of a...
That's Rx, which means prescription.
Whatever you want.
X, Jack.
And the profits from Rex are going to buy your station,
yeah,
right?
The next day we got a call. This is Richard Rogers' show. Lost $1,000,001 and played the one night, and that was it. The next day we got a call. Hey, guys, come on in. Let's talk. But we told the people not to come down from Albany on Thursday, and we didn't close. That was it. We lost it.
I think essentially, Barry, back in those days where you could... or even now, where you could put a little money into it, you would want to be there to keep an eye on whoever was running it for you if you, in fact, did not want to be there yourself. And the magic of New York, as opposed to living in some small town or whatever, precludes that. But I think probably not trusting whoever was going to run it for you when you couldn't have a first-hand...
Well, you know how many radio people have bought radio stations? One guy I can think of particularly used to be a big man in New York who have done very badly, lost a lot.
Well, that's
fortune.
It. You only hear
fortune.
Success stories,
right.
But there's a lot of people... It's one thing to be able to get on the air and so on, but the business side of it... Also, don't you think we're all programmed to kind of come in and do our show
right.
and leave?
Exactly.
You know, if we were owners, it would be a thing. You're there all day, all night.
You have to
be.
Sure.
You know.
Forget it.
It's like being the owner of a restaurant. If you don't watch the register, they kid you.
Sure.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah, the guy goes out the back door with two turkeys in his pocket. No joke. Having worked around saloons a little bit, one bartender can put you out of business.
Fellas, tell me how you guys feel about this. I have often been asked, why didn't you get into another aspect of the business, management, ownership, what have you? And my feeling was, all I ever cared about broadcasting was the microphone.
Yeah.
I never wanted to be in sales or any kind of an executive capacity, because I find most of the executives in broadcasting incompetent. I really feel that way about it. I think they don't know the business they're in, for the most part.
There are three in the control room who just fainted.
Well, that's the way I feel about it. And Joe mentioned something very early on. Guys who tend to be in positions of power usually come out of sales. They're not creative people. They're not program people. And these are the people who tend to wind up as your bosses. And I couldn't deal with that.
You know, I
never
find that changing. I find more creative people are, in fact, getting into management now. And I know it's my experience over at WYNY. We have some people directly from broadcasting and from programming who are running things, and I couldn't be happier about that. But by the same token, they have a great understanding of marketing and of sales, too, and an appreciation for it. You have to have the cooperation between the two. I must also say that it's in my experience that the salespeople over my way have an appreciation for programming.
Well, I think you're lucky. You're lucky.
That's right.
The point is that in radio or television, it seems to me that the selling and the programming must, in other words, it takes a clever boss to see to it that they don't interfere with each other.
Oh, that's right.
So that the salespeople Now, there are some salespeople who know programming. Most of them don't. Mm. And if they get involved in programming, even if the programming people aren't all that great, you're going to run into trouble. It's going to be a bad scene, let's face it. But if you have a bright guy who knows, that can keep the salespeople happy and keep the program people happy, then you can have a good...
Well, Jack and I work at CBS FM, and our boss is our program director, but he does an air show, which is great. He knows. You know, he does a regular air show.
Well, that's true in a lot of stations now. That's true in a lot of stations.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned Ruth Meyer earlier. We all know Ruth, and I think she's a very savvy woman. I think that one of the biggest things that's happened in broadcasting is the full-fledged entrance of women into broadcasting.
Oh, by all means.
It made an enormous difference.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
An enormous difference. I meant to talk about engineering.
I was going to say.
Every aspect of
programming.
Well, Ruth was really ahead of her time, Barry. And in fact, I think it frightened a lot of men.
Ruth should have been the Jane Pfeiffer of her period. No question about it.
Really. Ruth
didn't scare us, though.
No.
We used to let Ruth be the boss. She was absolutely brilliant, and we often said, you know, this woman ought to be paid $100,000 of 1955 money, you know, just to be around to keep everybody up and keep everybody laughing and the whole thing. And a more creative person,
Nobody ever said the concepts
on both the AM and the FM networks for NBC.
Very savvy woman.
Which is getting to be a very large business.
Nobody ever resented the fact that she was a woman. I don't think anybody thought along those lines. She was just creative as hell.
No,
that's all that really mattered.
I always one of the good guys. I really
absolutely.
Did.
Yeah,
I always felt that she was one of the group.
Right, really.
And you never got the feeling, and as a very attractive woman, never got the feeling that she was using that, you know, using feminine wiles. She was very hard-headed, tough, and knew her business, and that's what you respected.
And never took her eye off the ball, ever. The only thing she was ever interested in was keep the style of the consistency up and keep the ratings up. So if something didn't contribute to that, then it was no good.
Do you believe the ratings?
Well,
it depends.
Not
any one. Not any one rating, no.
In those days, the ratings were, I think, more accurate than they are now. Now you've got so many different crazy ratings with the demographics, left-handed 12-year-olds.
Well, the audience is so fragmented.
Yeah, but if you put three or four ratings together and they show a trend, then you have to believe that, you know, the figures may not be exactly right, but the trend is there.
Nobody dominates radio the way we did. Between 62 and 68, and then later ABC, nobody today dominates radio the way we did. What's a good rating today?
We were talking 15.
Sure. Yeah. And what about, and going way, way, way back to Martin Block, or High Lit in Philadelphia when they had 50s. But that's what's happened. The audiences have become more and more fragmented. There's been more and more radio stations, inevitably.
Well, there was an excitement then. Remember, you would get a Beatles record and put it on.